You were in a primary election, so I want to start by asking you if you plan to vote for Governor Perry in November.
I doubt it. That's a tough place for me to be. I've certainly been a longtime Republican and a staunch supporter of those political ideals. But I think I made it pretty clear during the primary and before that I just don't see the policies that are being supported by the governor as those that are going to protect life, liberty, and property, which is kind of that proverbial political voice in the wilderness, I guess, saying, woe to us, look where we're on the wrong path. We're not doing the things that we need to do to protect life, liberty, and property.
Are you going to vote for Bill White?
Oh, no.
So what do you do? Do you vote for the Libertarian? Do you skip the race? What do you plan to do?
I haven't decided that yet. I've got to look at the Libertarian a little bit closer. I think that some folks are making some pretty good arguments for, you know, undervoting and not voting at all. And yet, you know, the political establishment would say, oh, God, no, you can't do that. But I think we better start doing that. We better start saying, no, you are not getting my vote. You're not listening to me. Do you hear what I'm saying? I'm not voting.
If you don't vote, do people hear what you're saying?
I don't think they do. I think that most rank-and-file citizens are still of the mind that they've got to hold their nose and vote for the lesser of two evils. And I was one of those folks for a long, long time. But I'm kind of moving on past that and saying, you know, we've been doing that. In fact, I had a conversation with a state rep just recently who was advocating that very thing. And I said, you know, we've been doing that for 20 years. Y'all been telling us for 20 years, hold your nose and vote for the lesser of two evils. And you know what it's got us? It's got Texas number 31 on the list of states that are most economically free. Not doing it. And so if you want my vote, I'd love to be able to give it to you, but you're going to have to protect life, liberty, and property. You do that, and you don't have to worry about me. I'll be at the poll, and I will vote, but I'm going to skip a few races.
I'm curious if you see in any of the general election candidates, particularly for governor, but in any of the general election candidates, people picking up some of the ideas that came out of, this isn't all the Tea Party movement, but things like the Tea Party movement, things like your candidacy.
I think that you certainly see some candidates around who are espousing those sorts of ideals. I think the thing that's more disturbing to me, coming through the last year and a half or 2 years of the political cycle, is you have this increased passion around the country about public policy ideas. People are very unhappy with the direction of government. I think that's probably a pretty accurate assessment. Unfortunately, I'm not sure as a society that we fully yet understand what it is that government ought to be doing and what it ought not to be doing, because by and large we're unhappy, but we're still supporting the people and the ideas, or the people who have enacted the ideas that have gotten us where we are. You talked about on your Tribcast yesterday, you know, the kind of Joe Drivers of the world who are found to be in very compromising positions, and yet they're likely to win re-election, and those two things ought to be inconsistent. We still clearly have a lot of work to do to begin to get government back to the sort of government that at least the early founders, I mean, they had some problems even way back then, but that they envisioned for our country.
Tell me what you think's going on in the GOP, both in the state and in the country. I mean, you know, in some ways, there seems to be a split, you know, in some of the non-establishment Republicans who were running for office are starting, you know, at this point, you know, it'll move back and forth, but at this point seem to be having a hard time. Rand Paul's an example. He's pulled up even now. I guess he was way ahead. Some of those kinds of races. I'm curious what you see in a larger sense is going on in your party.
I think there's still a lot of lip service. I think there's this grand philosophic idea that we really want candidates who will be principled, who will be straightforward and honest, who will take a position and stick to it. And yet when you find those candidates, immediately people start to kind of nip at their heels about this, that, or the other little, sometimes kind of unrelated to anything the candidate's likely to have to do. We find a place to pick at them, and then you see them, as you've kind of seen Rand, you pointed out there, was he had a pretty good lead, and now the margin there is kind of closing a bit. I think he's still got about a 4-point lead on the recent polls, but and it's unfortunate that the Republicans haven't been more sincere in their stated ideas. You know, they say we want these kind of candidates, and yet when they get them, they tend to be some of the first to attack or to back away and not give that that candidate support because there's a question about this, that, or the other out there. And we see them, I think the thing that's been most disturbing to me recently is the defense of the indefensible. Or the failure to come out and objectively say that is indefensible. That behavior is inexcusable, and we shouldn't be tolerating it. It's unfortunate that one of our elected officials conducted themselves in such a way. We expect better than that, and yet the party is and leaders within the Republican Party have been want to do that as well. Fast. Quick to point out the splinter in the eye of the Democrat, slow to acknowledge the log in our own eye, and I think the public sees that, and ergo the, you know, politics as usual, politics is dirty business kind of stereotype, which aptly fits where we are today.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the dialogue right now? And I'm sort of guided by, I guess, the current fight of the moment nationally is over whether there ought to be some kind of Muslim community center or mosque at or near the site of the World Trade Center. You kind of wandered into this ground a little bit, not exactly the mosque, but wandered into the subject area a little bit in your own campaign with the 9/11 stuff. I'm wondering if this is what, if we're talking about the right stuff in these campaigns, if candidates are focused on the right stuff, if this is where the political dialogue ought to be right now.
Boy, I think that's a brilliant question. I think we're absolutely not focused on the right stuff. The right stuff ought to be, what's the role of government? Isn't it to protect life, liberty, and property? And how do we best do that? And why is that important anyway? Why is it important that you have protected life, liberty, and property? I would say it's because freedom in those areas ensures prosperity. Why is it important that we're prosperous? Because a prosperous nation can take care of itself and can invent the cure for cancer and put a man on the moon and do the things and respond to our neighbors, whether they're in our own community or in another nation in need. A nation in poverty can't do that. We want that prosperous nation who can solve the things that ail us. Then we have to protect life, liberty, property. That's the role of government. And instead, we get off on these rabbit trails about, you know, what the crisis of the day is, and everybody knows the answer to that. All the Republicans know that the politically correct thing to do is to be anti-9/11 truth and to be anti-mosque, you know, on the side of the World Trade Center. But what about the next crisis that comes down the road? Do they have the foggiest notion about what sorts of government policy would protect life, liberty, property, and what sorts of policies either destroy it immediately or ultimately lead to its destruction? And I think we're not having that conversation. We're looking at candidates for, you know, how presentable they are on a 30-second soundbite and not looking at what their philosophical core is and whether or not they understand the role of government.
What do you do with a question like the mosque? I mean, there's a philosophical question beneath it, and there's a practical question on top. So as a politician, what do you do if someone says, you know, what do you think about the mosque? How do you think that ought to be handled?
I think you get to the heart of the matter politically. What is the issue here? It is It fundamentally ought not be a religious issue. It ought to be a property issue. There are lots of questions. You know, that said, because I'm an advocate of private property rights. That means you get to do with your property what you want to do with your property as long as you don't violate the rights of your neighbors. And that's true whether I'm a Christian building a cathedral or a Muslim building a mosque. That being said, I'm an advocate of private property. There are lots of questions, aren't there, about that private property. Who owns that property? How did it get paid for? Why is there this seeming public-private relationship where our federal government is, you know, paying the way for this gentleman to travel around the globe raising money for this mosque? There's some very big questions about even the true ownership of that property and what happens there. And of course, is it ill-advised? I would say absolutely. Is it neighborly? Absolutely not. If I owned the property and were a devout Muslim, would I want to put the mosque there? No, I think I would, you know, want to be a little more sensitive to my neighbors. But do I have the right to do it? If I have clear ownership? Yeah, ultimately I do. I'd advocate against it, and I would, as a neighbor, say, gosh, let's have a conversation about this. Is there anything I can do to convince you what a bad idea this is? There's better use for that property.
What would you have done differently? If you rewound and hit the play button again and ran the governor's race, is there a way that you could have been either as a candidate or with your ideas more influential on what's going on now? I mean, if you played this all back?
Certainly you've got to go back to that February 11th interview with Glenn Beck and expect that, probably the Deborah Medina in her living room reaction there should have been bullshit. I kind of threw that card after the first debate, or right before the second debate, I guess, right? I had already said BS on what the governor was saying, and I should have said the same thing to Glenn. He did not get thousands of emails questioning that. I had been on the stump for over a year. That had never been an issue, and it had nothing to do with this race. And I should have called his hand on that and moved on to the things that we were talking about in Texas. You saw the momentum of the campaign kind of, hit a ceiling at that point. Would we have, over the course of the next 2 weeks, come in second, and would we have pushed the governor? Yeah, I've never been, a big kind of rearview mirror person. I did the best I could with what we had, and that's what I committed to from the very beginning of that race. Every audience that I spoke to the whole time that I was campaigning for governor, I said, you have this commitment for me. I'm going to work my butt off. And I did that physically and emotionally and intellectually. I worked hard to study, read, and really try to bring to the table ideas that I thought would restore the protection of life, liberty, property, and put us back on the road to a prosperous state. And I think I'm continuing to do that a lot. I think I'll do that until I draw my dying breath. But yeah, you have to look back to that one interview and think, man, what, darn it, yeah.